On today's episode, I have a very special panel of guests to talk to me about the new COPE initiative from the Grand Prairie Police Department. I have joining me Grand Prairie City Councilman Jeff Copeland. I have Courtney Reynolds, who is the supervisor for the Crisis Support Unit for the Grand Prairie Police Department, and Officer Greg New. And they're here to talk to me about COPE, which stands for Community Outreach, Partnership, and Education. And this is an information sharing program between the public and the police department that is incredibly unique and innovative. And to my knowledge, no other police department is doing anything like this. And it's my hope that after hearing this discussion and this conversation, that more people will want to think about it for their own cities and their own police departments, but that more people will be aware of it through the city of Grand Prairie and will want to sign themselves up or their family up for the program and just to learn more about what it does. And I really hope that this is informative for you. It was a great discussion. And so without further ado, here we go.
Hello.
How are y'all?
Good.
I am here today at, we're actually, thank goodness, Michelle had some space. We're recording at the Chamber of Commerce building, which is a great little plug for the Chamber of Commerce. So they had a space and now we're in here all snug as a bug and rug in an office. So anyway, I am here with three very important people to discuss a new program that the Grand Prairie Police Department is going to be doing. So first things first, Mr. Councilman Jeff Copeland, thank you. Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Oh yes, thank you for being here. So tell a little bit about what you do and kind of why you're here.
Thank you, Jeff Copeland. I'm on the Grand Prairie City Council, Place 7 at large. And this is such an amazing program we're going to be talking about, but there's so many people that contributed to it, but I might have had like the first thought of the idea and championed the idea and took it up to City Hall and put it in the hands of our city management and our police department, to which they then just took off and ran with it. And so excited to talk about the COPE program as we get into it.
Yes, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate that. And Courtney, thank you for being here. And tell us what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Courtney Reynolds. I am the Crisis Support Supervisor for the Grand Prairie Police Department. So our crisis support unit's made up of two clinicians and two officers. We're co-responders that respond to any type of crisis we have within our community and work to assist to coordinate resources for everybody that's in need.
That's wonderful. She and I actually got to have a pretty long conversation the other day, and I never met you before. So I'm so glad to be here. I'm so glad for you to be here. And now we have Officer New, who I have known for quite some time.
Just a tad bit. Greg New, the Grand Prairie Police Department. I'm in the crisis support unit now. Was in the community services and spent many years there, and now I'm here to help Courtney out. Somehow they assigned me to her about 3 years ago when we started up the crisis support unit, and now we're just here to watch it grow and help the community.
Well, that's wonderful. I guess, first of all, tell people what the crisis support unit is. Maybe, Courtney, if you want to tell people. I didn't even know that we had one of those, so this is a great opportunity to talk about that, too.
Yeah, so our crisis support unit, we have two licensed clinicians. We have a licensed social worker, and I'm a licensed counselor. And we're partnered with two mental health peace officers. So our role is we're a co-responder unit. We pair a clinician with an officer. We go out within the community. We respond to those people who are suffering from a mental health crisis. We work to assist in de-escalation, work to coordinate whatever resource might be appropriate during their crisis. And then post-crisis, we'll also do follow-ups with persons who are suffering from mental illness or their families. We'll make sure kind of that continuity of care piece is in place. Do they have the right resources? Do they need assistance in any way? We work to assist our homeless population as well. And then we also run a pretty robust internal mental health program for our employees to ensure wellness and resiliency. So COPE is just kind of another program that falls within our unit.
Yes. So how long have y'all been a unit? How long have we had this?
So I was hired about 3 years ago, and Greg was assigned to me, and then he decided to stay full time. And then we've just hired another clinician and another officer back in October of this year.
So you actually started this as a new kind of initiative.
Yes.
So this was like right before the pandemic hit, a little bit before.
Yes, about a year before.
That's what an amazing, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to talk to y'all is because I personally, from what I've seen and heard from a lot of other cities, even in Texas, there's things that Grand Prairie does differently, and it's innovative in the way that it kind of thinks about things. And I don't know how robust, like, mental health and the awareness of it is in other city police departments. Maybe you know? I don't know. Is that something that's pretty unique about us, or is that something every police department has?
Oh, it's definitely unique. I think we're starting to see more awareness come towards mental health. And with that, we're starting to see departments reach out to Grand Prairie to see what we're doing and see if they can try to replicate a program like ours. So I would say we're definitely innovative and on the forefront of this.
That's
amazing. And Courtney, tell the listening audience how many hours of mental health training an officer is required versus how many they're doing in Grand Prairie.
Yeah, so the state of Texas right now requires every officer to have 40 hours of our crisis intervention training. And at Grand Prairie, all of our officers receive that. We also offer an additional 40 hours of a mental health peace officer certification class. And we're currently working to get all of our officers certified in that. The pandemic.
Every one of them.
That's our goal.
Wow.
Yeah, the pandemic slowed us down a little bit, but we're back on track. And then we provide... Greg and I just did 6 months worth of additional training in mental health for our patrol officers to try to raise awareness. We talked about the COPE program and some of the other initiatives that we're looking at.
So I guess for perspective, is that a statewide, does the 40 hours statewide or a requirement?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
It's just we offer more or we require more. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Doing double. So before you started hearing all this on headlines, Grand Prairie was already out there doubling the rest of the field.
Wow, that's amazing. So Officer New, when you got assigned, why do you think you were the one that got assigned to this unit?
That one I don't know. I was working in community services, mm-hmm. and dealing with the neighborhoods and crime prevention, all that, homeless. So by the time Courtney came on, I tend to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. So I got assigned with Courtney, and we went out and started working, and I started learning from her more, you know, to deal with the mental health aspects of some of the individuals, and then we were still dealing with homeless. So, you know, that why they picked me, I really don't know.
Well, you haven't just been in, like, a one particular type of officer. Like, you've worked in schools, you've worked as a resource officer, you've worked in a variety of different...
In my short 32-year career, I've been the school resource officer here in Grand Prairie. Mm-hmm. Worked, you know, with your sisters way mm-hmm. back when, and worked with code enforcement and worked with the homeless. Worked with some of our mental health through the years. I mean, I've done traffic investigation.
Haven't you been a part of the National Night Out?
I deal with National mm-hmm. Night Out and deal with Crime Stoppers. So I've done a multitude of things through the years.
I can't imagine why they would ask you to be a part of this. Goodness. Is this something that, as far as having a crisis support unit the way that you guys are, and we'll talk about COPE for sure because that's the reason we're here, but have the police officers been pretty receptive to this?
I would say so. I mean, I feel like they've been receptive. You know, we found when we had deinstitutionalization is our officers have now become our de facto social workers within the field, and they haven't received the training in how to step into that role. So I think they've all been really receptive to at least having somebody to talk to or, you know, pass off a follow-up to make sure that the people within our community are getting the best service that they can receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, on an officer standpoint on that, I think looking back at some of the officers that we have now, the more training we've given them, the more it's come to a light for some of them to start slowing down, start realizing some of the things that are going on with individuals and maybe recognize that maybe they are having a mental health crisis as mm-hmm. opposed to just being mad. So slow down and try to rethink the situation out.
Yeah. It's definitely difficult to think about how to handle these types of things on a widespread scale as far as city goes. And so that's why I feel like COPE is pretty unique. I've never heard of anything like it. Maybe Jeff, tell us a little bit about like where this kind of came from.
I will. And thank you for that intro, because another member of our team that just couldn't be here today is my son, Kurt. And Kurt is home wrestling with a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, so he couldn't be here today. But Kurt was very much the inspiration for a part of the idea behind all of this. And Kurt has agreed to be the face of COPE. And my son is, I think he's either 29 or 30. Sorry, son, I don't know how old you are, but he's 29 or 30 years old. Has a mechanical engineering degree from Texas A&M. His wife's a doctor, two beautiful kids. Plays guitar, plays piano, just the most normal, you know, when you talk about normal terms, he just seems like a normal guy. And you
nothing on the offset would make you think anything, right?
And mm-hmm. He struggles mightily on a day-to-day basis. And so when I started hatching the idea, he was the first one I approached. And I said, son, this is going to expose some things. And are you comfortable with that? And I'll probably cry throughout this whole interview because I love my son. But he said, Daddy,
I've interviewed you before, Jeff. I know how this goes.
He said, Daddy, if I could save one person from going through what I went through, then I'll be the face of anything. So y'all also know me. If you know me, you know I'm not the most politically correct person in the world. So I'm going to kind of cut to the chase on some stuff and say, we used to throw around the term crazy a lot,
mm-hmm.
and we all know what crazy looks like. Every town has that crazy person that hollers at kids when they drive by or something like that. And now as we become more educated, we realize it's not crazy, it's mental health, and it takes on all sort of forms. So with Kurt, this nice, outgoing, well-rounded guy, he was struggling on the inside with anxiety and depression and Kurt would, when it started really manifesting in college, and he would come home and he was struggling and we would take him to get some help and he'd feel better and he'd go back to school. And that's when we started learning about masks and that everybody out there wears some sort of mask. And so Melanie and I had raised Kurt to be, I mean, we as a family went over and did dance lessons at Billy Bob's and piano lessons and all of these things to make him a well-rounded young man. Well, by the time he got to be about 18 or 19 years old, what I thought was a well-rounded young man, his brain, because of his mental health issues, had convinced him that he was just simply wearing a mask. And you put on this mask around this group and this mask around this group. So therefore, when it really completely manifested when he was down at A&M, was the only place he could be safe was in his room in the dark. He didn't have to wear any type of mask whatsoever, and he could just be himself. And then it turns into isolation, because I promise you, staying in your bedroom in the dark does not go well towards your grades to working on a mechanical engineering degree at a school like that. It certainly doesn't fly well at home when the grades come back in and mom and dad are saying, what's up with all of this? So we started realizing these things. And then most importantly, I think that we had a couple of real difficult episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, there are parents out there that have received a phone call that their child has died. That's obviously the worst phone call. The second worst phone call is Kurt's girlfriend called and said, have you talked to Kurt today? And I said, no. She said, you might want to reach out to him. We broke up today, and he's not doing well at all. And I started trying to reach him, and I couldn't. Luckily, I had a nephew going to school there as well, and I had to call him and say, hey, bud, I've got to send you on a real bad deal, and you need to go over to see if Kurt's okay. And I'm on my way. And I made that 3-hour drive in 2 hours. And my nephew went over there and went into Kurt's apartment and called me back and said, you need to get here as fast as you can. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, Kurt was in a fetal position under his desk, and he had his pistol that I bought him, that I took him to CHL classes with, that was sitting on top of the desk, and he was under the desk arguing with himself as to what to do. And it wasn't just because she broke up with him, it was the accumulation of all of it. And a huge warning that I'll send out to everybody, because it's a great blessing. Kurt said that night, just as plain as day, just as plain as you and I are sitting right here, that the devil walked into his room and said, "You're too much of a coward to even do this. You're even failing at this." And he said it right after that, just as plain as day, that Jesus sat down and said, "You are, I made you a coward so that you wouldn't do this." So you got to be real careful, because sometimes the devil and Jesus says the same thing, mm-hmm. you know, and they were both saying the same thing, but Jesus blessed him and said, "Yes, you are. You are a coward. You don't have the courage to do this, and that's why I made you that way." So all of a sudden that happens, and all of a sudden I've got suicide in my family, or possible, and we started working from there. And then what I saw was there was a couple of episodes to where just out of the blue, it just looked like a normal day that Kurt would glaze over. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're really getting into what COPE is all about, because I saw it firsthand with my son, that he would just glaze over. And we couldn't get through to him, and he would just be standing there like a frozen statue. And I would have my hands on his shoulder, and we're real, real close. And I'd say, "Son, it's me, it's me." And there was nothing there. And I started seeing police body cam videos of some of these mental health people that we're hearing so much about in the news now, to where our officers are following every procedure. Matter of fact, if the officers are breaking any procedures, they're probably putting themselves in danger at mm-hmm. that time, to where they're talking to a person that's glazed over. And I recognize that look. When you see it on your child, you know what it looks like. And I said, how do we get past that look? How does an officer do that? And as a dad, I couldn't do it. So how does a police officer wearing a black uniform, carrying a gun, taking an aggressive posture? That's not going to work. And then I started thinking, if Kurt was doing his dishes one night and had an episode and happened to have a knife in his hand, and his wife called the police, well, I would show up, and I wouldn't be at all concerned about the knife. I mean, I'd probably be a little cautious because he's glazed over, but if an officer showed up, the officer doesn't know who my son is. Mm-hmm. And my sweet wife, Melanie, we were having a conversation, and we talked about it, and we watched an officer video of an officer that had to shoot a suspect, and he had a blade, and he had charged at the officer, and I asked Melanie, I said, was that officer justified in shooting? And she said, absolutely. I mean, I'm going to say right now, our officers, any officer does not have to take a cut. I don't care if it's a 1-inch blade, a 2-inch blade. How hurt does an officer have to get before they defend themselves? But I asked Melanie, I said, was that officer justified in shooting? And she said, absolutely. The guy lunged at him with a knife. And I said, well, what if that had been Kurt? Mm-hmm. And she said, they'd have had to shoot Kurt. And that's when I said, man, I don't know why God put me on the city council, but I think this might be it. And we've got to figure something out. Mm-hmm. We got to figure a way to know. And how do we know? And from there, that's when I went to City Hall, and that's when the whole COPE program just bloomed right there before our eyes.
And this was last year, 2020. But one of the things I think is a really good point to make, and fortunately, we have a very functional city that works really well with each other. But I also, you told this story at Rotary, and you know, you'd kind of mentioned you'd had... somebody ask you as a city councilman a question, and we don't have to get into the specifics, but the question was, why don't people know?
Why don't you know?
And you said, and I love this, you said, my heart was hard at the time. And I thought, well, how are people supposed to know? But you said over time, you know, over the next couple of days, and you'd had that conversation with Melanie, your heart softened to the point where the question changed to, how can we know? And I think that that's very important, because as an elected official, it can be very easy to assume we know things, or that we have these viewpoints about how things should be done, and our first instinct is just to go right to that thing. until you start to go, wait a second, why can't, is this a possibility? It's not even that you know the answer at that moment. Maybe you can't do something else. Maybe the answer is we've tried that already and it didn't work this other time. But at least to have the idea that maybe something could be different, or maybe something could be tweaked or adapted or flexible. And I thought that was an incredibly important point.
You are warming my heart. I think that is... Thank you for sharing that. I'm looking at you. You don't have any notes in front of you. That's the biggest part of my speech, is I want people to hear that part of it. And because you're exactly right. You feel like you're being blamed. You're backing your officers. You've verified that your officers have followed every procedure. And maybe the procedures that they didn't follow were at their own harm. And then you're being accused of, why didn't you know? And boy, I was mad and I was upset. How could I know? How could I possibly know that? And then God literally changed that question to, instead of an angry tone, why didn't you know, to a question. Why didn't I know? And how could we know? And how could we find that out? And you know, our officers, when they are dispatched on a call, our dispatchers are giving them every ounce of information that they have. You know, everything going on at the house, everything the dispatcher's being told on the call, they're relaying to the officer. This was the next step. Well, how could we know more about this person's mental health? Because, and that's why Kurt is so important to the program, because he is what mental health looks like right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're all struggling. We're all walking around. I think all of the world has a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of depression. We all have the ability to handle it better or differently. We all have different levels of it, and it can manifest itself to that one day it reaches that breaking point to now all of a sudden this person is in front of an officer and they're armed. I don't care if they're armed with a skillet or a knife or a gun. That officer's in a bad situation. And one of the toughest things for me was sitting down with Chief Sesney and former Chief Dye in a room and saying, I back the blue. I am not accusing our officers of a thing. We didn't do anything wrong. What more can we do? What more?
So for those of y'all that are listening, we actually haven't even said what the COPE program is yet. So if you're feeling like, wait, did I miss something? So, but because I wanted to focus on, before we move into that, how change happens in a city. Okay, so, and how it happens in a positive way, in a collaborative way, and not as a pointing fingers way, and a let's go into the public eye and have this argument out, you know, where we accuse each other of the other side. Because what you did was you said, I'm going to take a meeting and I just want to see, is this something that we could possibly do? And so I think that's so important right now with the climate. And I would love to see something like this duplicated. So if anyone's listening from other cities, I want y'all to hear what I'm saying, because this is why you have collaborative. And I am by no means saying Green Prairie is perfect. Okay. I've grown up here my whole life. I get it. But like, there is a difference in the way that we can handle things sometimes. And it doesn't change things that have happened in the past, but it does change how we move forward with them in the future. And I think a few things have happened that have made this to where it can be, you know, successful. Number one, you have a chief who really believes in community policing and who understands what that even looks like, because people talk about community policing. And I've interviewed Chief Stephanie, and we talk about how he wants to have police officers that people are not scared of and that people know are there to help their community, that live in their community. That's another big thing about Grand Prairie, is that y'all encourage officers to actually live in your community. These are all things that I took for granted. I assumed this was the way it was in every other police department. And I realized over the course of this last year, that's not the way that it is. Police officers in every city don't have citizens on patrol. They don't have officers that take cars home with them and that live in the community. So it starts with having something that is even amenable to a conversation like this, amen. Right?
You know, you hear the term defund the police.
Mm-hmm.
And in our world today, everything is so politicized. And I don't care if you're listening to this right now and you're far left. I don't care if you're listening and you're far right. My cell number is 817-320-1685. Call me and challenge me on this, because this is so nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. This is so down the middle. Defunding the police is a horrible title that politicizes an issue right now. Because I guess there are some people out there that really like to just totally defund a police department and let whatever happens, happens. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is looking at our budget and saying, well, and maybe in some smaller police departments, you do have to take something away from one department to put it into a crisis unit like this. But in Grand Prairie, we valued it, and we already had it in the budget. We'd already had this unit before we even came up with the COPE idea. So this isn't a partisan program. This is putting resources to a problem that has now become an epidemic mm-hmm. in America. And mm-hmm. I doubt that there is a person listening that does not have either a direct relation or a direct friend that you can't equate this to. Now, maybe it didn't manifest itself in a suicide. And I'm not even going to say it was a suicide attempt, but that's is as close to suicide as I hope my family ever mm-hmm. gets. Maybe you don't have that, but maybe you do recognize some of these things of depression or anxiety, and there's somebody that you can help, you know, that can help from benefit from this. And so it's a dedication of resources, mm-hmm. and it's not a defunding of the police. And that's why it is our hope that this becomes a national program, because I don't see how anybody could be against what we're yeah. about to be talking about today.
So Courtney, tell us what how it works so that we kind of know from a logistical perspective.
Yeah, so COPE stands for Community Outreach, Partnership, and Education. And so what we're really trying to do is partner with everybody in our community. We're trying to educate the community, just like we're educating our officers on mental illness. And we're working to reduce the stigma surrounding mental illness and everything that is. So the way the COPE program works is, a lot of people are familiar with registration processes. We usually see it for people who are suffering from Alzheimer's, dementia. You can let the police department know about your loved one. That way, if something happens or they wander and they get lost, your police department has their information. So we took that idea and expanded on it after speaking with the Copeland family. So basically what we have said is that if you are suffering from a mental illness, if you're suffering from an intellectual developmental disorder, if you're suffering from autism or Alzheimer's, dementia, anything that can fall in any one of those categories, we now are allowing you to register your information or the information of your loved one with our department. We take that information, we ask you to sit down with our unit. We want you to meet our unit. We want to meet you. We want to make sure that we understand the questions. We understand the answers. We want to make sure that you understand us and see how we can really partner together. And then once we have finished the registration process, we have the ability to put an alert on somebody's address, on somebody's name, and on somebody's license plate.
So it's completely voluntary, right?
It is. It's completely voluntary. Mm-hmm. If you're over the age of 18, you have to register yourself. If you're under the age of 18, a family member can register. Or if there's guardianship or power of attorney, then you would be able to register a loved one.
Wow. So what does this do? So now you said it puts an alert. So what happens then?
Yeah, so what'll happen is if there's a call for service at your address, or if an officer encounters you on the street, or if they pull you over on a traffic stop or any other reason that they would have to run a license plate, now that officer's provided with information at their fingertips that says, this person's enrolled in the COPE program. Maybe they're sensitive to lights, or maybe, you know, they're sensitive to loud noises. Maybe they're suffering from Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, we're able to put an alert on there so that our officers know immediately, this is what's going on with this person. These are some things that may work in communication with them.
It seems so obvious. Like, I mean, it really does. Like, when I start to think about it, I'm like, why has this not been a thing before? Yeah. But you also have to, you talked about this at the Rotary too, Courtney. You said, it's only for the city. We don't share this with the state, with all that. So there are questions of like privacy and stuff like that, that maybe couldn't have happened, you know, along the way, but it just seems so obvious. Why doesn't this happen all the time?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. That was kind of our stance too. When we had this meeting, it was like, well, yeah, I mean, this is simplistic. We do only keep it in-house, so the privacy is stored on our own secured server. We don't share it with other cities. Our first responders are the only ones that have access to it.
And you have to do it every year.
You do. So right. You re-register every year. So just because you're registered this year and you want to opt out next year, then that's completely fine. We'll remove that alert and continue on.
I feel like that's genius because now you don't have to go through a lot of like making sure people are still there and having to go through all that. That seems obvious to me.
Yeah. Yes. And you can upload a picture. So we have a picture of you or your loved one. So if we come in contact with you, we know it's you. You can upload medical documentation. You know, there's a lot of things that go along with the silver alert should somebody go missing and the documentation our officers need, and that can be a time-consuming process.
So silver alert already exists for seniors.
Yes, and so in order for us to issue a silver alert, we have to have documentation from a doctor about certain diagnoses. Well, if that's in the middle of the night when your loved one goes missing, we don't have access to that documentation sometimes until the next morning. So you can upload that now, and if they go missing, we hope that never happens, but if it does, now we have that. Now we can get that silver alert issued.
That's a good question. I didn't even think about this, but when you see a silver alert, I mean, so now that people have put their information up onto a database, this is health information, yes. Voluntary. And I'm sure y'all talked through this. Hopefully I'm not putting you on the spot with this question, but let's say that someone is missing,
yeah.
and you want to put out an alert that someone is missing. Are you allowed to tell the public what it is that they suffer from? Or because I can't remember on silver alerts, does it say that they have dementia?
It doesn't on a silver alert.
Okay.
And we would never use this information.
I would imagine this would be a privacy issue.
Yes.
Somebody would have a question about.
Yes.
That's why I'm asking the question.
And there's also affidavits. So you sign affidavits when you enroll in this program so that you're allowing us to have this information. With the silver alert, the only information goes to the Department of Public Safety so that they know, yes, you do qualify, but that information does not get released to the public.
So it's not like when they issue a public statement, it's not like you're going to be releasing what any of the afflictions or the illnesses or anything. Okay. That's good. That's good to know, I feel like. So in the meantime, let's say that now everybody's in the database and nobody has any issues with the police that year. What else do you do for the people that are in the database during the year?
So we're reaching out.
I mean, not even in the database. This is what y'all do, but yeah.
Yeah, so when we have our initial meeting, we try to get a feel for, do they want contact from our unit, or are things going pretty well and they want us just to kind of leave them alone? They're just wanting us to have their information. So that's kind of where that partnership piece comes into. If you want contact from our unit, we're happy to follow up with you. We have some kids with autism that fear the police. And so we have offered to have some police officers go to their house or have them come up to the station and meet with our officers if that would be helpful for their families. So,
oh my gosh, that's amazing. That you take for granted so much about things like that. Like if you've never had contact with a police officer. Mm-hmm. Now, I was raised knowing a lot of police officers. I just did. My dad was a principal. I knew resource officers. So police have never scared me because they've always been a friendly, you know. Now, that's not to say I haven't been pulled over for a couple of expired inspection tickets and stuff and gotten tickets for those things. But it's not a fear factor to me. And I take for granted myself how publicly I've been around authority figures like that. So for someone to have not had because you're not in trouble,
right.
But then you have this issue happen. So to have a little bit more awareness or contact or, you know, that's positive.
Yes.
What a great idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, does that happen a lot where that comes into play?
We haven't had a lot of people request it, but we have offered it to a lot of people and they've been open to it. I think it's kind of like Jeff was talking about, you know, it's finding that comfort. It's finding that facing that fear almost of putting our information out there. And that's scary. We're all afraid to put our information out there and we want to keep ourselves private. And that's why we work really hard to meet with people and make sure that they understand the scope of this and the scope of when we would use this information. You know, for me, I think that there's a lot of times maybe we get called to a house by a neighbor. Or maybe we get called by someone who's standing outside of QT and they don't have that background information on that person. And so if you're enrolled in our program and we pull up and we run your name and you're entered, it's like, oh, okay, now we know who this is and now we know what's going on. because they haven't been able to give the dispatcher the backstory. And so that's kind of the piece to me that I think is really important for our officers. If I'm calling in about a loved one, you better believe I'm going to give you all the information that I have. But if I'm calling in about a stranger, I don't have a lot of information to give. So that's really where we can take charge of our loved ones and making sure we're arming everybody with our information so that we can have the best response possible.
That you're making a good point. Well, here's another thing that you had mentioned in Rotary. I think it's good for people to understand. You can't just put anyone onto this database.
Right.
Like, you can't just go, okay, my neighbor has issues and I need to do this for them. Because let's be honest, there's some people that meddle that would be happy to do something like this. But you have to actually be that person's guardian or something like that to be able to get them.
It's not a get out of jail free card.
Right, okay? Right.
But it's very similar to prior to Texas having open carry and you had to have a CHL. In order to get your CHL, you had to go through an extensive background check. And then as soon as you get pulled over, an officer can see that you're a CHL holder. Well, you would think that that might make the officer a little bit more nervous because they say, well, this person probably is carrying a gun, but it actually eased the officer a little bit because they're saying, well, this person had the ability to pass a background check. And that's where COPE comes in, is that it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card, but then the officer knows, I mean, information is power. And so now this officer has so much more information at their fingertips than they had before that, yes, they're there at Kurt's house, and he has registered, and we've given that officer all the information that we can. Maybe, depending upon the time, maybe Greg and the other officers of the unit are able to respond to that call. But that's where you'll hear, there's so many... I hope that this program takes over America in 10 years, and I hope that this basic idea that we have has been added on to, but there's going to be people that criticize by saying, well, why don't we have a trained counselor go to every call?
Yep, that was going to be my next. She and I had this conversation the other day.
It's impossible to do that, and I'm going to tell you...
you go on, I think that this is a good point to make. This is a program that seeks to reduce... the risk of anything that happens because something has occurred to have made this, when the police show up, something has had to happen. Usually something has triggered that. This is not to delay the consequences of that action. It is to help reduce or hopefully reduce the amount of escalation that could potentially happen.
The original name of COPE, what Kurt and I took up to City Hall and said we had an idea we want to talk about, we had named it Just One. Mm. And that was from Kurt's comment about, Daddy, if we could just save just one person. But the one we're talking about is a person with a mental health, or we're talking about that officer. Because I promise you, none of our officers get up in the morning and say, I hope we get to shoot somebody today. And they sure don't want to shoot somebody that attacked them with a knife that's the sweetest person in the world, but was glazed over and having an episode. So we wanted to save just one. And then the Grand Prairie Police came back to us with our last name being Copeland and our police department being so into community outreach, they came up with the acronym of COPE, which was honoring to us, but I think it does more. But you're right, just one. We can save just one person, one mom and dad, one officer, one person.
Yeah.
And Jenna, on that, I mean, you know, we're talking about a situation where you called us and I was able to read some of this. Let's go back to 2 o'clock in the morning when we're not getting a call, but we stop that car. We run that tag. Unfortunately, it's only going to work in Grand Prairie right now. I mean, if we can get state legislation passed and then national legislation, it's one thing. But if I'm stopping a car at 2 o'clock in the morning and I run the tag and all of a sudden I see an alert come back that this individual has some type of mental illness, maybe autism or anything like that, and whatever his responders are, it may give me a chance that when I walk up to the car and he's not acting in a certain manner that I would expect, then it allows me to think, well, wait a minute, here's what the problem is, and now I can slow down, back up, and maybe reassess the situation and deal with the individual there and maybe have a better outcome.
So you said what the responders are. That's really important. So when you talk about responders, you mean... What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, what would set him off or her? Or what can I do to maybe calm them down? So what key words could I use? Could I, you know, they don't want me touching them or I'm too close. Maybe now I can back up for, you know. Again, take that time to realize I'm dealing with an abnormal situation, not just somebody that robbed the store and is just trying to get away, or somebody who's just mad at me that day. I'm dealing with
just being ornery. Yeah.
So we could slow down and go back that route. If it was a situation where I went to an individual's house, and we try to put, you know, that data in there when our officers are responding now, so we can have a better understanding what we're going to. But that situation, like I said, and Councilman Copeland's over there, is we respond to, you know, a house and the individual has a knife and we're searching. It allows us to know what's going on and back up and then try to go into, you know, negotiations with them, for lack of words, just to talk them down. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm there 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, just to get them out there. And I think the situation's there. As he said, I've done this for 32 years, and no officer that I know through the 32 years, the two departments I worked for, the two different states I worked for, none of us want to take a life. Mm-hmm. And once I take that life, that's something I have to deal with for the rest of my life, regardless of what it was, right or wrong.
Right or wrong.
You know, I still have to deal with that. If it was totally on my right to do what I did, that's still not something I want to do. And I want to sit there and go for, you know, as long as I can before I'm forced to take that situation. Up until that point, now with the Grand Prairie, I can't speak with all agencies, but some are advanced out there with more equipment and some with less. But I know with Grand Prairie, I mean, we act upon tasers to try to deal with the situation, to bring somebody under control, to get control of them in a better light, an easier manner, to maybe get them to the hospital. It's not always to go to jail. We have less lethal weapons now to try to, again, get them under control and not have to use that deadly force.
You're talking, but this even goes back to, instead of using the speaker on the top of the police car to say certain things, changing the approach to a vehicle, to a person, because now you know this person might have PTSD and loud noises trigger his, yep. You know. So it even starts before you even interact with that person. Would you agree?
It could start
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you said, in Grand Prairie, if we do it, if you're in our system and I ran your tag and you put that tag in on the alert, as soon as I run the alert, it's going to pop up a screen to tell me, not the whole synopsis of what's going on, but not I don't have time to read a whole paragraph, a whole page of what it's all about. We might get there, but in that key point of time, I now get to know I'm dealing with something. Why is he not stopping? You know, anything of that sort. Why are they not rolling down the window? Why are they not responding to us? Then I may have a couple key words right in front of me along with the picture to say, here's my problem. Mm-hmm. And now I can approach that car and again, slow down and try to get the response that we need out of this situation, even on a simple traffic stop.
Right.
We're talking about a crisis situation to mm-hmm. where a person has glazed over and they're either armed or they have something that could hurt the officer. And in that very first meeting at City Hall, what Kurt stressed to us was, let me know that you're there to help.
Mm.
You can't say I'm here to help enough. I didn't know that. I was his dad, and I didn't know that until he came out. And so, you can run some scenarios to where a passerby drives by and sees a car on the side of the road, and they see the person with a rifle in their hand. They're going to call the police. Now the police show up, and, you know, there's two different ways. Police show up on a call to a rifle, that's one thing. But now they pull up and they identify the tag, they see the COPE registration. Maybe that whole call takes a whole different look to where that is when the officer gets on the speaker and says, and we say, hey, Jenna, this is Jeff. I'm here to help. I'm sorry I'm in a police car, but I'm here to help you, and I don't want to hurt you, and I don't want you to hurt me, and let's figure this thing out.
Yeah.
That
so,
could save a life.
Absolutely, 100%. So, to get into the database, do you have to have a diagnosed illness, or what are the requirements?
Yeah, I mean, we would like for it to be diagnosed by a doctor, just so that you kind of understand what's going on with you versus somebody who just thinks that this might be going on, but we're not going to turn anybody away. So, I mean, if you don't have a diagnosed mental illness, but you are suffering from certain things or responses would be better. I mean, we would certainly talk to you and see how that kind of fit.
So your background is what? Tell me again.
So I'm a licensed professional counselor. I have a master's in psychology.
Okay. So you and I, and Jeff was kind of going to start talking about this. A lot of people, there's been a part of the conversation that mental health professionals should be the ones responding to these phone calls. And you and I had this conversation. I feel like that's ill-advised, to say the least. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit. Why is it important that this is through the police department and not through like maybe a hospital or something like that?
Yeah, I'm big on the partnership. I think it takes both. I think that when we look at safety of the community, safety of our officers, safety of myself, I think it takes both of us. And so I know that there are certain situations that may not be dangerous initially, but they could turn dangerous or could potentially be dangerous. And I think for any of us, none of us know what we're walking into when we go and knock on somebody's door. And so I think that while I am a proponent of a mental health professional being present, I think that we have to be aware of our surroundings, and having that officer to partner with us for the safety aspect is essential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just expecting to send out mental health professionals that have no awareness of how, because the two do work hand in hand.
Yes.
I mean, how they haven't been more hand in hand to this point, I don't really know. But Officer New, like from a perspective of, because you've been doing this, you said 32 years. I mean, things have changed over that time in terms of how police handle things like this. So have you seen, I mean, I asked you this earlier, but have you seen police officers that are like kind of happy or embracing the idea that there's something that could be done that could maybe help protect them also, you know, in situations like this?
Yeah, I think you still get both aspects. Mm-hmm. But on the majority side of it, officers are starting to embrace it. You still have to change that culture down the line. I think we're doing a good job of that. So some will embrace it. Depend on Courtney and Emily that we have working with us. Call them on a constant basis and get them. I mean, we during COVID, I had the ability to look at Courtney. Courtney wasn't here. I was out there by myself. You know, COVID, I didn't get to, you know, take off all year, and I had to go out and work. But we didn't want to take her and put her in certain situations. So we came up with I was on a call, and we came up with an idea where I was out there and I was dealing with a situation, and she, Courtney has more knowledge about the situation than I do, or maybe keywords that I can deal with and lead me. So I took my phone out and put her on FaceTime, and FaceTime turned it to where it would look at the individual without telling them and put my AirPods in, and Courtney's watching the situation, feeding me back the data, ask him this, ask him that. And then so I was able to go in some questions and ask questions and diffuse the situation. And we've done that on several occasions. You know, I try my best to protect these young ladies that we have with us. That's my ultimate goal. But even on that, on the mental health side of the professional and the specialist that we have and the knowledge that I can get from her, it's great. We're on calls to where they don't want to talk to her. And they'll talk to me. Mm-hmm. So we know with mental health, it really has nothing to do with the law enforcement, the counselor. It's who do I want to talk to that day? Who do I respond to?
Mm.
So yeah, we can send, I'm not against sending counselors out there with us. It takes on an added role for me and a higher responsibility to protect another individual while we're there. But I want them to be safe. You know, we've seen counselors across the country go out and do this, and we're seeing that trend, and we've seen counselors get killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're dealing with a situation. There's nowhere down the line that I want to send her or anybody else unarmed to a potential suicide, you know, even with just a knife. And mm-hmm. some would say if it doesn't involve a gun, then a cop doesn't need to go. Well, mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of people work knives, and they can be very dangerous with them. So again, not to say that I'm there because of that, but now we get to protect her, standoff, and hopefully go into, I don't care if it takes us 3 hours. We've been on calls where it's taken me 3 hours of just talking to an individual to mm-hmm. get them into a car and take them to a hospital. I'm okay with that. You know, if I can do it in 10 minutes, great. 3 hours? Well, that's what it took that day, and we saved their life.
Well, it's almost like whenever you start to reduce the amount of crime in a city, police officers don't have to rush from place to place as fast as they need to. You do have a little bit more of the ability to do that, and that's what I would hope, is that, you know, we have that so that we can we can continue the community policing. When Chief Sesney started explaining that to me, it went down to even the point of he would go, please stop telling your children that if they don't clean the rooms that you're going to call a police officer. Because it was a joke, but you're telling kids that that's exactly what police officers are. And, you know, that's, you have to start there, you know, like make sure that you have a police department that really does care about the community that they're policing. And, you know, Grand Prairie has always been that way for me, but I've noticed just, it's a trend that's going this way anyway, nationally. But I feel like Grand Prairie started with that before a lot of other people kind of figured that out. Mm-hmm. And so I like that. I think that as a citizen, it makes me proud that there's all this good, cool, innovative stuff going on. And I think that it's important as citizens for us to understand and not take for granted just how far ahead some of the things that we're doing are. I mean, Citizens on Patrol is another one that I take for granted. They have like Neighborhood Watch and people like that, but not like we do. And so I started talking to other real estate agents from other cities and they're like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, y'all don't have that there? Y'all don't get cars? You know, like, I don't understand. What do you mean? So bringing awareness to that is really important in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's putting a face on mental illness. And because there's not a doubt in my mind that anybody listening to this podcast right now does not know someone or love someone or that. And the thing that was so impressive to our city leaders and our police department when Kurt came up and spoke to them was these are well-trained people, and they were a little shocked at what Kurt looked like, you know? And that's what hit them the most was that they said, and all of this happened right before COVID shut down. And I think it's about to happen now, but Kurt's going to go up and speak to all of the patrol units before they go out. And let them see him and let because these officers are getting double the amount of training than anywhere else in the state of Texas, but it's important to see this is what it looks like now. And it's not that crazy person on the corner. It's this person right here. Mm-hmm. And I'm only using the term crazy because that's what we all grew up identifying as. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it looks like anymore. And something else that the unit will do, if the person wants to be contacted with Kurt and everybody, they struggle taking their medicine. Mm. And I don't know why that they're suffering from anxiety, depression, whatever it is. Myself, I struggle with taking my meds from time to time. I don't have it like Kurt has it, but hell, I think half the world's on an antidepressant of some sort. But with somebody like Kurt, he feels so much better when he's on his medicine. But for some reason, part of the disease is don't take the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to drop by and just say, hey, man, how you doing? Just want to check on you, on your meds. And just seeing them so that if something does ever happen with his address or with his driver's license or with his license plate, they're going to have a good idea of what's going on.
This is so bizarre. I listened to some of the most random podcasts, but I was listening to there was a whole podcast episode about why do people struggle with taking medication. They're more likely to keep their dog's medication up and get their dog their medication than they are taking it themselves. And I'd never thought about that way. I mean, how often do we have to hear a doctor say, please finish all 10 days of your antibiotic. Make sure you finish the entire bottle because people start to feel better and then they just forget. So, I mean, so that part of it is to me like a really important part of it as well. And so, you know, kind of talking a little bit, and we don't have to talk about the homeless necessarily, but we also have, you know, Tammy Chan and we have the Grand Prairie Homeless Organization that does this. Are y'all working with like organizations to try to get the word out about what this is when it comes to that kind of thing? Or, you know, like working with organizations together to get the word out about this program?
Yeah, I mean, we talk to our homeless outreach groups.
Mm-hmm.
We have multiple that oversee between the Dallas and Tarrant County lines. We try to get that out because I think, a large majority of our homeless individuals are probably dealing with a mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Who would never know that this program even existed, you know? Yeah. Right.
And we do go out into the camps and talk to individuals, offer them assistance, try to get them back on track, get them into shelters, get them where they need to be so they can try to get back to a sustainable life and not, just live on the street all day. And even that, then we try to get them enrolled if that's what it takes. But again, we're dealing with those individuals. Like Courtney said a while ago, you know, Councilman Copeland can call us about his child and we go, great, and then we can reach out and get an application. But if that individual doesn't want to sign up, there's nothing we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And when we deal, again, from my perspective, when we deal with some of the mentally ill and those in crisis, they don't want to recognize that they have this.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody does, but that's part of the battle there. If they can't recognize what problems we have, we can't even start to address the problems.
Or with dementia or Alzheimer's, you don't even know that you're suffering from that. You have no, you know, and so that's another part of it that you don't think too much about. I would imagine that this is going to make it, because I just feel like there's been such a separation for so long between the police and the citizenry, that making sure that people that might not trust this program or might not trust the police start to actually trust it. And I don't know, this is one of the reasons I actually wanted to do like an entire interview, is because this is not something that you just are going to see in a city newsletter and be like, oh, okay, I'm going to sign up for that. Like, you really have to understand what it is. Because it needs more explanation than just sign this up.
I can't tell you how excited I was when you asked us to come mm-hmm. up and talk about this, because you do a great job. But right now, we're out trying to spread the word. I mean, we're just now getting started because COVID set us back, and we're talking to Rotary clubs and I hope this podcast and so our goal is to save somebody in Grand Prairie. In the same time, Our what I call a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. I think this is a wonderful, simplistic idea that doesn't really cost much money and could be implemented throughout all of America. So I hope somebody listening knows somebody in Omaha, Nebraska, and says, listen to this, because the BHAG is that the Omaha Police Department calls Courtney and says, tell us about this program. And Grand Prairie's already got it all lined out and says, here's how you go about implementing it. Here's how you get the word out. Here's how you do this. So right now it is all about just getting the word out and getting people signed up. Because, Jenna, not many people have signed up. Now, it was COVID and we haven't been able to make this deal. But there should be thousands and thousands mm-hmm. and thousands of people in this program right now. And so the more people we can tell about it, I don't ever want to have a parent ask me that question.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you know?
Because
now I'm begging you. I'm giving you a chance to tell me. I'm begging you to tell me. And then if you do, maybe we can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it just takes time to get used to when things change.
Yeah.
And people have their own questions, they have their own hypotheticals, they have their own bad experiences in the past maybe, or something like that, where they don't trust. And it's, you know, trust is gained over time. And so this is something that's new, and it's something that I think is amazing. I think it's an amazing idea. I think it's an amazing program. And I think that we have the right environment to show how well this can be done. In another city, maybe it wouldn't be like that. Maybe there would be a lot of other things about it that wouldn't go over well, or that it could be abused from the get-go, something like that. But because everybody has good intentions about how this is going to work, you know, this could set a really good precedent. And also, just how can we go about just, you know, getting people to know that things, you're trying to think outside of the box to solve as many problems as possible. Officer New, do you have anything else to add?
No, ma'am.
You're just always such a talker.
I am.
Enjoy the silence.
I know, right? No, Officer New and I have had numerous conversations over the years. So, did I miss anything?
No, I would just reiterate. I'd like everybody to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
It would make it better.
Why don't you tell people how they can do that, since we haven't actually discussed that?
They can come to the police station, or they can go online at grandprairiepolice.org. We should have a link there. I believe we have a link at gptx.org. If not, gptx.org will link you back to the Grand Prairie Police Department, and we have links on there for the co-program. They can get the application offline, fill it out, bring it back to the police department, or get it back to us, and we'll set up a meeting. And like I said, we'll set up a meeting with them and their loved ones. Try to bring them in, even if it's their child, so we can meet with them. Like Courtney said, get to meet with the unit. All of us get to meet with them. if we're fortunate enough to do it that day, but as many of us as possible will meet with them and get them into the system. I can't say enough about it. I mean, we've had programs in the past, you know, for heat, you can register your car not to be out at 2 o'clock in the morning, but we can't register your loved one who's having a mental illness or a crisis at that time. You know, I had to hit on that. I mean, in defunding the police, yeah, I'm a police officer, and I thought it was a wild and crazy idea, but I know it's coming back around. I've already been watching the negatives of that. But I'm not against say, yeah, let's take some money and put it over here to another program and maybe better our mental health program we have here. You know, I mean, realistically, what I'd like to see with the Grand Prairie Police Department in the next few years, you know, if we can find the grants, the funding, you know, we've got a unit of 4 to 6 clinicians out there working, so we can better off serve the citizens of Grand Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that look like? Yeah, it's a cost, the funding of it, but we'll eventually get there, and I know Grand Prairie will do it. I grew up here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to the better side of town for schools, but
no, there's no need for that.
Now I know where you went. So, you know, I grew up in Grand Prairie, and I love Grand Prairie, and we just need to we need to step up and get there. And if mm-hmm. we can make it on the national level, the program can make it. You know, we can start with the state, and we can go from there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, y'all did great on timing. We have about 25 seconds left on the, it stops it when it records to 60 minutes. But, and if you haven't gone to the police station, go up there anyway. Like, it is an amazing building. Like, if you haven't seen it as a citizen, but thank y'all all for being here.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Mm-hmm.